I'm an ex-whore 3 weeks out of the loony bin.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 3, Episode 8, Love Reeks.
You were spoiled.
And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Hello, everyone out there listening to this podcast. Before we get into this episode, we want to tell you about Again With This, episode 29, which is dropping January 8th. And the topic is, let's read and discuss Andrew Hsu's 17 cover story. Before we even get to that, here's some teasers for you, Sarah, because I went through the whole issue. There's a misogynistic guy talk column written by someone named Robert Love, who may or may not be a person. I looked, seems like no. There's some copaganda in the cars column. 1 million hideous prom dresses, and you listeners can see them if you are a Patreon supporter to get the link, because your girl got a scanner and I scanned them all and they are tremendous.
I was told not to peek, so I will be enjoying them at the same time as everyone else. Happy New Year to me!
Yes. So please join us at patreon.com/againwiththis to get that episode and all of our other episodes, including our Again With Them digest episodes if you are a Patreon at the $5 level and up. And now, Love Reeks! Starting with our C-plot, Joe's extreme stress causes complications with her pregnancy. Oh, God. Joe and her bell sleeves, so bad. Also, this buff-colored top that she wears, why? Just stick to black. Joe, it works for you.
Yeah, it really does. Oh, God, the bell sleeves. I'd had my share, and they all got ditched or rolled up eventually just because they were dragging through salsa, getting lit on fire, etc. So,
yeah. That was one I never got on board with that trend for whatever reason. I think the shorter ladies just can't. But yeah, I didn't do the bell sleeves. Anyway, Joe and they go to see Amanda at her office asking if the agency has any more work for her because she's in a legal jam. In case you hadn't heard, she could use the money. Amanda says it's not a good idea for Joe to work more in her condition, which, like, at this point, she's not that pregnant. Not like it's not really Amanda's place to say. And Joe snaps that she's fine, besides which she legally can't prevent anyone from working because of pregnancy, which, okay, that is true if Joe were an employee, which Joe is not. And D&D could just not hire her for gigs and make up any reason why they're not. But you know,
yeah, and with that attitude, I'm pretty sure they will find a reason not to. But okay, good luck to you.
Yeah. So besides which, like, what's she going to do? Sue them with the money she just said she doesn't have for the lawsuit she's already in? You know, like, try it, I guess. But Amanda backs off, saying she was just voicing friendly concern. She claims she's doing everything she can and there aren't any open assignments. So Joe apologizes, saying she's under pressure. And Amanda is sorry. If it wasn't against her policy, LOL, she would float Joe alone. Which, like, she could suspend her rent, but whatever. No one suggests that. Would be a nice gesture, but fine. She does promise to send Joe any work that does come across her desk, and Joe has nothing else to say, so she shuffles off, taking her sleeves with her. And the next day, she's reading a harassing piece of mail on her way back to her apartment when she trips and falls stomach first into the stairs and cries out in pain, as any of us would. And Sydney comes racing down to help her, yelling for Jake. And then he appears and sends Sydney to call the hospital and at least does not tell her to call for an ambulance we know Joe definitely cannot afford. And when they arrive, Matt is there to push the wheelchair. Aw. Giving him a thing to do. Aw. So, well, he also gets to grip her hand while she lies in bed, whimpering that she just keeps thinking about Reed's parents trying to take the baby away from her and how her body is rebelling because she can't even protect her own child. Matt tells her she can. She's going to be a great mother. Every day he sees situations that seem impossible, but there's always something that can be done. The most important thing is for her to remain calm. And Kimberly interrupts just then to say that Matt is right, rudely adding, "for once." Which is like, not necessary, but sure.
And Marcia Cross's reading of it is like, I don't understand why I was given this rude line, but I'm just going to zest it up. Just like, for once. Like with a penny whistle. I was like, what is happening?
Yeah. So the baby's fine, but Joe is developing an ulcer and needs to find a way to reduce her stress and focus on staying physically well. Dave, did you want to comment as a fellow ulcer sufferer?
Yeah, it hurts. If you get the right one. Ooch. Oochie moochie.
He doesn't have an ulcer anymore that we know of, but had surgery right before I met you, I believe.
Yes. Just before. The ulcer healed and scarred so much that it closed the bottom of my stomach off and I could not eat or drink. It would just be like, got nowhere to go. Let's go back up whence we came.
Bad times.
Medicine. And then you met me, like, what'll happen when you see our visual aids? See what I did there?
So Kimberly then gives Joe her home phone number and offers to help any way she can. Joe is suspicious about why Kimberly is being so nice to her. She says she can't stand to see a friend in distress. And I guess Joe is in such a bad way that she doesn't follow up with, are we friends, though? That's where we leave it for this storyline. Moving on to our B plot. We all agree that Allison is annoying, but Susan is also a bad friend.
Yes, both of these things can be true. We are adults and can hold two concepts in our heads at one time.
Boy, this is a tough one. So, okay. Well, starting with him and his hair, which looks the worst it's ever been. It's like so gelled. You can see it in the visual aids spilling. Speaking of barfing, as he strolls across the courtyard and knocks on Allison's door. Susan opens it and says Allison's not there, but of course, it is Susan he is there to see. He starts by asking how her job hunt is going. She has an interview at Chasen's today. Sure she does. It's like one of the oldest fine dining places in L.A. Like, no. But he has just wished her luck and blown some smoke about the talent he doesn't actually know she has, which she at least calls him on. When Amanda rolls by and says that if Susan's going to be living with Allison, Amanda will need to put her name on the lease. Susan says she's just staying there temporarily. Amanda coos that she hopes that's not the case since people seem to enjoy having her around. And Billy makes this face like, Mom, which is kind of funny. So Billy having been thus busted, Susan sidles off to get ready for her interview, and Billy and Amanda head off to work. Amanda asking whether Billy's going to do anything about all the flirting she claims she saw Susan doing, and Billy says, it's complicated. And at the office, Amanda's telling Billy and Allison that all the ideas they came up with for some beer campaign have been rejected when she gets a delivery of a dozen red cliches, I mean roses, from Peter Burns.
I think he took out of someone's room. Not so fresh, just my opinion.
I didn't notice that, but that's a great note. You're probably right.
There was one in particular that was like right close to the camera that I was like, just you got that one has to go. It's just like crunchy. Yeah, no good.
So she tells Allison that Peter is great and all, but that he's moving kind of fast, to which Allison spits that he's so romantic, Amanda has to go out with him again. Plus, if Amanda's pining for Jake, that ship has sailed. Allison then turns her attention to Billy, suggesting they work through lunch on new pitches, but he has plans, which are to go surprise Susan after her interview and take her to lunch. And just a note, the white tights.
Ken? Girl.
Yeah, I had really, I mean, when we saw them on Sydney, I think last season or possibly earlier this season, I was like, maybe they're long johns, but like going through this issue of 17 that we're going to be talking about, no, they really were just, people just wore them. That was just a thing. And I had forgotten that white tights were around.
I mean, and I'm sure I had a pair. I'm not better than anyone as like we should do visual aids of my photos from this era. It's there were body suits. It was not well advised. But like, I also had like the Hugh Paisley tights that were $20. Same. Why? Yep. I mean, 94, that's why. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like the white tights, I don't understand why that in particular was a thing.
Yeah.
Because it just is so, it's flattering on no one.
Yep.
And it makes you look like a literally a baby.
And especially since the standard shoe of the era was like chunky and black, like does not look good with white tights.
Yeah, no. I mean, it put like 20 pounds on each leg of Cheryl Pollock, who is very slender and lovely. Like she has a perfectly cute figure, but then it's like the white tights are just, it's a lot. And even in a long shot, like I marked it for the visual aids and it was like, oh why?
Sweetie, why?
You look like a bowling pin.
See it in the visual aids, as Sarah said, but oh my God, you mentioning the Hugh tights, what a Proustian Madeleine, had him in mustard. Why? Had him in purple, for sure.
Yep.
Royal blue.
Eggplant.
Obviously.
Or as I believe we started calling it then, aubergine.
Yep.
And red, of course.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And royal blue. I think I might still have that pair. I'll give Hugh credit. Their tights
are
tough.
Yeah, they last. All right. This has been tights talk. Susan is reluctant, but agrees to go to lunch with Billy when he talks up the chili burgers he intends to buy them. Okay, again, here we have chili burgers. The first time that Jesse and Andre were going to fuck, it was tacos. Like, what is this? Oh, burritos, that's right. Either way, like, this is not sex food. Guys.
No, like anything would be less fun. Like, you know what we should have? We're about to fuck. Let's have cabbages and drink some milk. And then a bean suppository. Guys, you're doing it wrong. Confident.
Let's make Brussels sprouts and then let's just like leave them in the room just for the aroma. So then he opens the driver's side door and he makes her slide across the front seat, which I assume was because there were only certain places they could put the camera. But like, she's in a skirt. It's so weird. This is also in the visual aids because I was like, what the fuck? But anyway, she thinks she got the job. Amanda's eating at her desk later when Peter calls. She thanks him for the flowers, but adds that they're maybe a bit excessive. He counters that it's not every day he has such an extraordinary dinner companion. And I kind of feel like his next move is going to be like, so am I firing Kimberly and Michael or what? But instead, he asks if he wants to go out again. She's not sure what she wants to do. And when he's like, say yes, it's a turnoff for her. He guesses that she recently got burned in a relationship and she testily admits that he's right. He says he enjoyed being with her. She's spirited and smart. Ugh, she's not.
Spirited? She's not a filly.
Thank you. And he's never going to push her into anything. I mean, I'd like to see you try, but okay. And then he says he has tickets for a box of four for a Mozart concert, which he pronounces correctly.
Thank you.
At the Hollywood Bowl the next night, she can invite a couple of her friends. They'll have a great time, and she agrees. And the next day, she finds Allison at the office and thanks her for the good advice about giving Peter another chance. Although, of course, she does not miss a chance to shiv Allison for the dig about Jake. And then pulls Billy aside, seriously 2 feet away from Allison, where she's guaranteed to hear. You can see this in the visual aids because Allison is like between them as they are talking, like barely behind, and invites Billy and a date to take the other 2 tickets to the concert that night. And she pretends not to remember Susan's name at first, but then suggests her as the possible fourth for the evening. Billy's not sure. So Amanda says she's going to give him the same advice someone gave her. If Billy's still pining after Allison, that ship has sailed. But has it, though? Has it? And also, again, unclear whether we're supposed to think that Allison heard any of this, but they are right in front of her. But, you know, normally they would, like, do a pan to her being upset or whatever, but they don't. So I guess we're supposed to think she didn't.
Well, and also I feel like they're hedging their bets on, like, how anyone feels about each other in this situation. Like over this episode and the next one, it's like, guys, these things did not occur that long ago.
Right.
Like, that, you know, the retcon of why they broke up is already happening. And it's like, no.
Yeah.
You know, much like Brian Austin Green's parenting, I'm not letting this shit.
Thank you. So then Susan in her weirdly dowdy outfit, which you can see in the visual aids, meet Billy somewhere that Allison is unlikely to catch them so that he can ask her to the concert, which he says is tomorrow night, but which Peter said was tomorrow yesterday. Get a calendar, bitch. It's immaterial anyway, because Billy hasn't even finished his sentence before Susan refuses. He tries to wheedle her into it, but she reminds him that Allison's her friend and that his call just missed her. Susan had to make up something about going to the store to come and meet him. Like, what the fuck? He's still in his tie. Allison's at work. What is the timeline? Whatever. Billy does not take any of this seriously and smirks at her infuriatingly before saying that she can't deny there's something going on between them. They both want what's fair for Allison, but they matter too. And if it goes anywhere, they'll tell her. So will Susan just give it a chance? And of course, she will. And then he pushes his luck by kissing her, but she's into it. And the next day, Allison gets up to find Susan in the middle of a recipe that apparently involves 1 million vegetables and also made coffee, which is what Allison mostly cares about. But when she asks what Susan's making, Susan spins a whole line of bullshit about the catering gig she got making a picnic for the Hollywood Bowl. And Allison's happy for her, but otherwise uninterested, except to note that they had plans for Tex-Mex, margaritas, and a movie, which they now won't be able to do. And I would love to mock that for being basic, but that sounds amazing.
Yeah, it does.
Susan, terrible friend. And she's like, I completely forgot. Allison laughs it off. They'll do it another night. It's more important that Susan get out there and make some money. And this apparently makes Susan feel guilty enough that Allison notices her face falling, but Susan says she's fine, and Allison leaves. And at the bowl that night, Peter tells Susan that the dinner she made them are wonderful. Billy toasts to Peter for inviting them along. And then Susan whines that she can't help feeling guilty about doing this behind Allison's back. The important thing is that she have a good time and she have a good time tonight, Billy says. And Susan's like, but she is my friend, which the time to think about that was before. Like, shut up. You're on the date, stupid. It's too late.
Yeah.
That's when Amanda interrupts to be very typically Amanda about it in clip two.
I couldn't help but overhear. Billy's right. Allison can be a great friend, but she'll always look after Allison first, so you better do the same. I mean, she single-handedly destroyed a relationship of mine, and I still can't figure out why. So, just watch your back.
She and Allison aren't very tight.
So I gather.
A few things about this. Amanda acting like she and Allison were ever friends is curious, because no, they're not. They never were friends, really.
Mm-mm. And especially, like, I don't know, with every passing episode, Amanda's role at D&D seems to grow more and more importante. So, like,
right.
Leave it out.
Yeah.
Just shit on her like you want to do. That's the dynamic in this relationship. Like, don't pretend that you used to be friends and now it's a rivalry.
Yeah, it's dumb. Furthermore, I mean, not that Allison can say it, but she's not the one who told on Jake or told on her to Jake. That was Billy being drunk.
Yeah.
But, you know. Anyway, as soon as the music starts, Peter gets Amanda to lean into him and Billy and Susan commence making out. So, you know, Mozart accomplished, I guess. So then we see them coming home to the courtyard. Peter peels off to go back to the hospital. Billy and Susan say goodnight directly outside Allison's door instead of around the corner or something. Like, way to keep it on the low, guys. And of course, Allison is creepily watching them from behind the blinds as they kiss in the archway. Dumb. But you can see this in the visual aids because I made a GIF. Once again, Susan's cooking when Allison staggers out the next morning. Susan says she was feeling guilty about missing their Mexican dinner the night before, so she got up early and made huevos rancheros. Allison may have just gotten out of bed, but she is not too logy to set a trap, asking Susan how her job selling dinners at the Hollywood Bowl went. Susan, a typical TV bad liar, mumbles that it was fine, quickly changing the subject by offering Allison coffee or juice. Allison would not like either, narrowing her eyes as she says what she actually needs is to go take a walk. And apparently she walked to Shooters, which is where Susan finds her, several screwdrivers in. Susan waited for her to come back from her walk, but clip three.
Sometimes all roads lead to Shooters.
Sometimes.
There you go.
Have a drink. Help you see things more clearly. It's a little early for me. Mm. Is that so? Actually, I came in here to talk to Jake, but the bartender says he's not due in for another couple of hours. Jake owns this place now. But you don't care, you don't even know him. He's a friend. You know what that is? A friend?
Look, Allison, I don't know what's going on, but I am your friend.
A friend is someone who doesn't betray you. A friend is someone who doesn't sleep with your boyfriend the minute he moves out.
Allison, I didn't. We went on a date, that's all.
Don't pinch the fine points, Betty Crocker. You lied to my face. My little dinner business is going so well, I've got a foothold. You make me sick.
Allison, please. I'm sorry. I value our friendship, I do.
Susan, get out of here. While you're out, find another place to live.
Drunk Allison is the bomb. I'm so glad we're here already. I thought this was like many episodes away, but oh man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Courtney Thorne-Smith is quite good at this. Well done.
She is. I mean, she's wrong in the particulars, but she's right overall. Like, Susan is acting shitty. And, you know, if you lie about this stuff, you're going to get caught. And this is the result. Like, if you value their friendship, you don't do this.
Yeah, it's true.
On to our A-plot. Time to break up another Vegas wedding. Poor Sydney trudges back into the courtyard looking wrecked. She knocks on Jake's door and tells him what happened with Chris after Jake left. Jake does not remotely doubt the veracity of her story, gently ushering her in and just asking for particulars, like exactly what Chris did to her. She minimizes the incident, saying she fought him off and declining Jake's offer to take her to the hospital on the grounds that no one there will believe her. Jake firmly says they will make them believe her. Sure would be nice if Sydney's sister felt this passionate about her well-being, ever. Mm. Sydney counters that she's an ex-sex worker, not the word she uses, 3 weeks out of a mental institution, also not her term.
Also not the word she uses. Yeah.
So she's not going to be perceived as credible, but Jake shuts that shit down. Clip four.
Sydney, you're talking like you deserve this. You don't. You get a fight back.
Look, what just happened and everything else just makes me feel ashamed, okay? No one's believed me before, and I can't do it anymore. I just can't. If I could just stay on your couch tonight, I just need to feel safe, all right? I know I'm imposing, but...
No, of course you can stay. Don't even think about it. I'll be right back.
Please don't leave.
It'll only be a second, and I'll lock the door.
Hey, what a concept.
Yeah. I mean, like, as much as I like Jake in this moment, it's like, of course, white dude is like, you'll be like, we'll make them believe you. Oh, really? Will you? Good luck with that. Poor Sydney.
Yeah. But at least someone is believing her. I mean, it's something.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I also like seeing them act opposite each other, knowing that they were together at this time, because it's nice. they're sweet together.
Yeah, now I like, but I'm always wondering about the Savant timeline, because it's like, when did this start?
Right. So he stomps straight over to Jane's to try to tell her how shit is. But as he's pounding on the door and bellowing, Amanda comes down to say that Jane isn't there. She and Chris left for Vegas about an hour ago. Jake comes back to his place to find Sydney curled up in the fetal position on his couch, apparently already asleep, or so it seems. And as he's pulling a blanket over her, she rouses enough to mumble that no one will believe her. He says he believes her and he's going to do something about it. And it's very sad, but also, again, thank God someone heard us and is helping her.
Yeah.
Next morning, she's covering up a bruise on her eye when Jake brings them each a cup of coffee. She's feeling much better, thanks to him, but she's also jokingly suspicious about why he's being so nice to her. Very gravely, Jake recaps, leave it to the professionals, that she was working for him when Chris attacked her, and then when he gets back from Vegas, Jake is going to straighten him out. This is the first Sydney is hearing about this trip, and she is silently aghast that Chris is actually following through on the plans that he told her about. And Jake, not knowing about Chris's long game, says he has to go open the bar, but that she should go get some rest, and he'll see her for the dinner shift. Like, oh, I don't get the night off? Oh, okay, cool, sure. Fine. At their lockers at the hospital, Kimberly suggests that Peter may actually just be who he says he is, a committed surgeon and administrator trying to improve the hospital. But Michael is convinced Peter has an angle and he intends to figure out what it is and take advantage of it. And Sydney enters just then and says she needs to talk to them. They both reflexively try to get rid of her, but she persists, telling them the guy they're in business with is a psycho. And when she goes into detail, they do not exactly cover themselves in glory with their responses. Clip 5.
He's like a split personality or something. Last night he came into Shooters and jumped me. He tried to rape me, talking dirty like a madman.
Ooh, you better keep that appointment with your shrink, Sid.
It's the truth. The guy's a freak.
Yeah, well, he sounds perfect for you, Sid.
Is he perfect for Jane, too? They're getting married this weekend in Vegas.
Wait a minute, are you sure?
They went there last night.
I gotta stop this.
Why? Who gives a damn?
We do. If that down-under dipwad marries Jane, he gets more control of the business. And you can damn well bet they'll find some way of pushing us out.
Somehow I think this has more to do with Jane getting married than business.
I don't care what you think. I'm going to Vegas and stop this. Somebody's gotta protect our investment.
Fine. But if you think I'm letting you near Jane unless I am right beside you, you're crazy.
I love that the, like, inter-warfare in their relationship is just, like, out in the open and they don't care about witnesses. Like, thank you. It saves us a lot of time.
It really does. I also don't love that this is what it took for them to care, but Sydney seems glad it worked. So, you know.
Mm.
Whatever it takes, I guess.
Exactly.
Cut to some B-roll of the Vegas Strip from above, and then inside a hotel where Jane is enthusing about what a great weekend it's been, shopping on Chris's dime as he just signs for everything, and she's amazed that everyone just seems to know him, as if this is not a red flag.
Oh my God, it's Jane. A huge, huge red flag. It's like a sail. It's a David Silver-sized flag. Come on. Fucking Jane.
So as they enter their suite, she comments that there seems to be something on his mind, and he admits that there is. Her. All last night and today, he's been working up the courage to tell her he wants her to be his wife. Will she marry him? She's only shocked for a second before agreeing. They can do it at a chapel in town the next night, he says. She is thrilled. He'll get them reservations at Spago and meet her down at the casino after she's fixed herself up. Cut to a table where Chris announces that he will need a $20,000 marker. A pit boss who knows him by name takes off to check for him and then returns to say Chris is already into the casino for $50,000. Chris confidently says he's good for it. He just finalized a deal that'll keep him in money for a long time to come. Again.
Mancini designs. Oh, Chris. Like,
the idea that this is a money-making operation, still absurd, but... The pit boss does not ask for specifics, as he should, and that's all he needs to hear. Sometime later, Kimberly and Michael have made it to the front desk at Caesars and are fighting with the clerk to try to make him give them Chris's room number. Michael eventually downshifts, claiming that Kimberly wants to get married and Michael's fighting his cold feet, even though he knows it's the right thing to do. He was just hoping their friends could go with them to the chapel, but he guesses they'll have to take the plunge on their own. And as he holds up a bill to the clerk, he asks if there is a chapel nearby that the hotel recommends. The clerk obliges, and once Michael has the info, he snaps the 50 away. This is why you get Sir Sneavers all the time, my man.
Yeah.
Call back to the rude waitress when Michael had amnesia. As they take off, Michael says they can at least find out if Jane and Chris are married or not. Kimberly asks if they're going to stake out the joint if Jane and Chris aren't there. It's obviously... also possible they got married someplace else. Michael asks if Kimberly has a better idea, but she does not, because unlike Michael, she is not obsessed with the little blonde bitch. Tough but fair. Over to the Silver Bell Wedding Chapel. The woman at the keyboard is kind of kitschy, but Jane looks very pretty, I thought. I thought that dress was nice on her. It's like a bias cut satin job. Her hair is okay.
There's I think there's another claw clip. Guys, it's not a semi-formal and above hair look. Stop doing it. I am not a crackpot.
The minister has just gotten to, does anyone object? When, of course, because it's a TV show, that's when Michael storms in, Kimberly in tow, saying he sure as hell does, claiming business reasons. Jane counters that he's just trying to keep her from being happy. Chris threatens to call the cops if they don't leave, but Michael is undeterred. Clip six.
I heard about the attempted rape you pulled on Sydney. Did you know this, Jane? Yes, the poor girl was working alone, and Mr. Outback here jumps her.
What?
It's a lie.
No, it's against the law, big guy.
Get out of my life, Michael. Leave me alone.
You're way over the line, mister.
And what are you gonna do about it? Get physical? I'm not some skinny little redhead. Now, you can go ahead and have your affair with Jane, but you keep your hands out of her wallet. And I really don't care what you do with the rest of her.
You've ruined this. Are you happy?
You'll thank me for it later.
Rotten hell. Both of you.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Now, that's what I call investment counseling.
And it was kind of fun, too. And now, since we're here and we've got a minister and everything.
Oh, Kimberly, you know, I don't think it's a very good time.
Michael, you proposed to me, and after everything I've been through with you, don't you think I deserve a little something? Besides, can you think of two people who deserve each other more?
You're right. Let's do it.
See my previous comments. Love it.
Indeed. I don't care what you do with the rest of her. He's not doing anything, so you're all good.
Yeah, I mean, talk about a red flag. Like, do not marry someone in Vegas that you've not fucked. It's a good rule. I'm going to stitch it on a pillow and sell it on Etsy. Enjoy.
So we cut away from this happy couple to a pissy one, Chris and Jane, stomping into their room, crabbing about how this could have happened and what a shame it is that Sydney wasn't a good enough driver to have killed Michael when she had the chance. That one is Jane, who apparently still thinks that Sydney did it, which Sydney did plead to, so fair, I guess. Mm. The conversation quickly descends into mutual recriminations. Clip seven.
What I can't understand is how you could have ever married such a complete psychotic jerk.
I can't understand how we let them ruin our wedding and keep us from having what we wanted.
Hey, sweetie, I mean, what were you supposed to do? They're out of control. I can understand why you wanted to get out of there.
Blame me? The whole marriage was your idea. Why didn't you stand up to him?
Look, darling, that's your ex-husband and his lunatic girlfriend. That's your baggage, not mine.
You're right. I'm sorry. I don't want to fight. It was just a stupid wedding. We can get married later.
You're right, my darling. I didn't mean to upset you.
I need you now. I need you so much. Make love to me.
Not yet, Jane. I really believe we should be married first. I really do.
What is it? I don't understand. What's wrong with me? Why don't you ever want to make love to me?
Let's just calm down.
No, I won't calm down. We're going to be married eventually. Isn't that good enough? Now just cut the sensitive crap and just take me.
Maybe you better rest. I'll go downstairs for a bit.
Michael may be an ass, but at least he could do it.
Now whip out your dick.
Well, she's really not wrong. He should.
Yeah. Especially his hair is like growing out into this cube shape that is like, if someone wants to fuck you, take advantage. Because it's not going to be a long list.
That's true. Ooh. And I mean, speaking of Michael being able to do it, and how, apparently, everyone who's ever had sex with him is, like, ruined forever.
I know.
Anyway.
Good for you.
that's our act out. And when we come back, it's hours later. Chris's beard has kind of come in and he's striding back into the room to throw a bunch of filthy casino cash at Jane and tell her he's up 10 grand. He also claims the casino loves him, which I doubt if he's winning their money, but whatever. She's impressed, but she wants to talk. He thinks they've done enough of that and is apparently finally ready to fuck her, but now Jane is the one who wants to slow down, but he ignores her and she apparently likes it. So finally, the deed, it is done. The next day, Michael and Kimberly are back in the hospital. Michael in happy disbelief that they actually got married in Vegas. She's excited about having two doctors' salaries in one household, but it doesn't last as they are intercepted by Peter, who sends Kimberly down to deal with a stat call in the ER. And then, clip eight.
I'm on OB2.
No, you're not, Dr. Mancini. You're fired.
What?
You were on call this weekend. You left no forwarding number and you were nowhere to be found. We were short-staffed and you put lives in danger. You're out of here.
But we were both gone.
Dr. Shaw had the last 2 days off. Clear out your locker. Your career at Wilshire Memorial is over.
Oh, shit!
Sick burns!
And then, to slightly backtrack, the symphony is tuning up at the Hollywood Bowl when Peter proudly announces to Amanda and Billy, I guess, that he shit-canned Michael earlier, but no one is really terribly surprised. Waiting. So after her shift, Kimberly finds Michael on the beach, having apparently sat there feeling sorry for himself all night. After he cleaned out his locker, he was mad and vowing revenge. Then he got home and it hit him. He didn't know what he was going to do or whom to call. She's sure he'll be able to get a job at another hospital, but Michael is just as sure Peter is going to get him blackballed with the State Medical Association, like for blowing off a shift that seems excessive, but okay.
Well, there's also the traumatic brain injury,
right,
et cetera, and so on. I don't know. But I mean, we all listen to Dr. Death. Just move. Just go to Arizona. It's fine.
Well, instead of engaging with this self-pity, Kimberly tells him to look on the bright side. Clip 9.
We're finally married, and no matter what we do or where we go, we'll always have each other.
Who cares? I'm not a doctor anymore. I'm married to nothing.
Yikes.
Okay.
Good luck, everybody.
Yes, this self-pity is unlike Dr. Mancini, so look out.
Mm-hmm. So then Chris and Jane sweep back into the courtyard, agreeing that they are still going to get married before kissing goodbye at the door. And as soon as Jane's inside, Chris turns around to leave and runs right into Jake, weirdly in a tank top and dress pants. She could see the visual aids.
Like, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah. Clip 10.
I talked to Sydney. She told me what you did to her.
Come on, what I did to her. I didn't do anything to her except in her imagination.
Shooters is my place, and Sydney works for me. I don't like my people being messed with, especially when their working it keeps them from doing their job.
And you're going to believe that little whore.
It is quite satisfying, I must say.
Mm-hmm. It's good. The fight choreography here is satisfying. If one-sided, Jane and Sydney both come running out just in time for Jake to throw Chris into the pool, and he or his stunt double goes flying over a chair, like somersault style, which you can see in the visual aids because I'm
Bruce. It also looks a lot funnier because Chris is consistently in these Derek Driscoll, like, two Sydney Opera Houses fucking suits.
Yeah.
So, like, he happens to be in an angle where he really looks like he's getting a lot more air. It's good. I mean, it's hideous. God, men's suiting of that era was... I mean, how did anyone ever fuck? Seriously. It's really grim. Such a dark time.
So Jake tells Jane he knows who Chris really is, and Jane counters that she's calling the cops. And Jake then goes into his place, followed by Sydney, and they have this exchange in clip 11.
I saw what you did for me out there.
I didn't do it for you. I just did what was right.
Yeah, well, right or wrong, no one's ever done that for me before. Thanks.
Sydney. I don't think we should do this.
I guess we should. We really should.
I agree with her. And they do.
Yeah. Although my last note of the episode is, why is Sho such a weird kisser? He's really a weird kisser.
So weird. There's a gif that you can see. And considering that, you know, they were a couple for real, like the way his mouth is like barely touching her upper lip. Like, I don't know if he was just trying to make it pretty for the cameras or just like not go for it too much. But it's extremely strange. You're right.
Well, and I mean, when he was trying to kiss Kelly, it was like, OK, there are diameter issues here that are not Grant Cho's fault.
Yes.
But this is no longer a factor. I mean, not that I wouldn't take a run at it, but he's a weird kisser.
It's weird. Let's say he's a weird stage kisser and hope that that's as far as it goes. Because, you know, he's had some very pretty girlfriends, now wife. Let's assume that he knows what he's doing when the cameras are not on him.
I think we safely can. Yeah.
And that's it. Let us name the episode MVP.
Jake, I guess.
Yeah, Jake is a good choice.
I mean, kissing aside, like, hashtag believe women. I mean, I know the tank top with the dress pants was weird, but there was still a tank top. And
there was.
He, you know, like, according to the Foley design, he punched Chris almost to death. So, plus, everyone else is kind of a C-minus at best this week, including Amanda. So, yeah.
I agree with you, but I'm going to also give a shout out to Sydney because she needed to stop a wedding without actually going, and she did. So,
yeah, she did. Good for her.
She pulled it off, and she bagged Jake. So, two wins for her.
Yep, that's legit.
Least valuable player. I mean, still Chris.
Yeah. If we're subtracting sexual assault and soapy scheming from the equation, Susan.
Yes. Yeah.
White tights and
white tights and shitty friend.
Billy.
It's Billy.
It's Billy.
Good call.
Yeah. Next time on Again With This, Joe is stressed some more. Jeffrey is back for now. Eeyore is taking comfort in the arms of Stoli again. And everyone else is learning not to stick their hands in the Mancini. You'll want to stick your entire head into a punch bowl of Malox after you get a load of our visual aids, which you can find at our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you can find links to our very special 90210 book with excellent visual aids of its own by Julie Kane, so browse on over there today. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 and join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis, where any level of support gets you extra content. I'm Last Minute Nuptial Substitution Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Sick Burns, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Gambling Endorphin, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time. Ooh. What?